Welcome into the Pits and Peril podcast. I'm your host, Todd Kramer. Week four is now in the books. Lots of injuries to talk about. Things are starting to get interesting in the league. Some people's teams are looking mighty strong. Others are looking weak as hell. And here to break that all down for us is this week's points leader, our faithful commissioner, Anthony Yazaki. How's it going, Anthony?
Good, man. I mean, you know, it's kind of crazy that we're like, what, you know, like a third of the way through the fantasy regular season already. And it feels like very early on, but there's also, it's also like, yeah, getting to the point of the season where it's not just like small sample size and you got to start making some serious decisions. And, I think, it's going to start getting more and more interesting from here.
Yeah. You know, I think next week, I guess you could say winter is coming. And by that, I mean, things are going to start to thin out pretty significantly. Once week six hits and bye weeks start, teams with depth obviously start looking way better than the kind of front-loaded teams that are kind of juggernauts when they can play all their big-name players. But then you also have luck start to play more of a factor where, you know, if you're playing the week, you're playing Bill the week Christian McCaffrey's out, or you're playing, you know, for example, I think I'm playing Keenan the week Amon-Ra and Hockenson are out. You start to get a little more of that type of luck in the mix where if you're playing a team when they're on their heavy bye week, it can help you get that win that you really need.
Yeah, for sure. I think we all know that matchups, right, are just who you're going against in any particular week is just a huge sort of factor in, you know, obviously in failure and success. And so, like, yeah, bye weeks, once those start and you combine that with injuries as the season goes on, I mean, definitely that's, yeah, I mean, it's a huge factor is just what week you're facing which guy.
Yep. And we got one more week where everyone can play all their players that are healthy. But after that, things start to thin out a little bit and the sits start to become way more difficult. You end up having to drop players you aren't 100% comfortable dropping in order to fill those spots in your lineup, especially at the quarterback or tight end position. So things should start to get pretty interesting from here on out, but let's talk about what was interesting last week. What were your takeaways from week four?
Yeah, man. I mean, so right as we've gone through 4 weeks now, and you know, you look at the standings, and you can kind of see how the standings are just sort of the rankings are shaking out a little bit, and you get to see some of these tiers. But honestly, I think pretty much like 1 through 8, right? It's separated by, you know, a few games, but like, honestly, I could see any of these teams sort of picking it up and moving out of that sort of bottom tier, or likewise, like I could see some of the teams toward the top, like dropping down. But like, what I think we really saw is just that there are two teams that are clearly at the bottom tier of the league. And right, I think it's a matchup we're all kind of keeping our eye on just because we are, you know, to some extent, we're more interested in who's going to be in the pits than who actually wins. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the Ace versus Wally matchup that we just saw this weekend, I mean, it was, I mean, with apologies to these guys, it was kind of just a pathetic showing all around.
Why would you apologize to them? It was a pathetic showing. There's no point to apologize.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure these guys are already feeling bad about their teams. So I just don't really, you know, I don't feel great about rubbing salt in the wounds, as Wally was saying. But I mean, yeah, it was that was just a brutal sort of matchup all around, right? I mean, should we dig into this? Like, I've definitely got a few points I wanted to make. So unless you wanted to go through like your sort of takeaway from the week, I'm happy to just sort of dive in into the pit bull early on in the season.
Well, I guess I'm just going to tag on to what you were talking about. You know, you claim there's two tiers. I would say there's three tiers. And I'm not going to do my power rankings this week because I think these tiers are so clearly defined. You have the bottom tier, which I would consider the likely in a Pitts playoff scenario. You know, they're playing for their Pitts. You've got Ace and Wally. I think there's a three-man tier right above that where between Frank, Holden, and I, one of us is probably going to make the playoffs. The other two are probably not. Obviously, injuries can change all of this, right? You know, you get one big injury and everything goes to hell. And then I think the other five teams, so Keenan, Bill, you, Nikki, and Cappy, as long as nothing drastic happens, I think all five of those teams make the playoffs. But as we saw with Tua getting, you know, nearly killed this week, anything can happen. So subject to change, but as things stand now, those are my three tiers. There's the likely to be in a Pitts scenario. The one guy makes the playoffs, one guy doesn't, and then the other one's maybe fighting for their Pitts kind of second tier, and then the other five are looking like strong playoff teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying makes sense, but I think there's a little bit more interchangeability between those top two tiers. But yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from.
Well, if you want to jump into the pit bull, go ahead. I'm my guest.
All right, let's do a little bit of a deep dive here, right? Because so Wally took down Ace's team 100.06 to 89.6, so basically 100 to 90, right? And you know, when there are huge blow up weeks, we've seen single teams score as much as these two guys did combined. So, I mean, just right, I mean, and they happened to be playing each other, so it was really sort of just like a symbolic kind of, you know, final score here. But all right, let me just read you a couple of names of guys on Wally's team, and I want to ask you what these guys have in common. Okay, so four players: DJ Moore, Tyler Boyd, Javonte Williams, Terry McLaurin. These guys are all on Wally's team, but yeah, is there anything else that comes to mind about what is similar about these guys? Okay, well,
no.
The answer is that all four of these guys were on Wally's team last year. And like, basically, you know, I think all of us are guilty in fantasy football of catching one of the worst STDs that you could possibly catch, which is catching feelings. Okay. Like, we've all been there. You get emotionally attached to a certain player or two, and then you end up drafting them, you know, multiple times. And usually they've had success, which is why you just feel like you just want to keep them on your team. But for whatever reason, right, Wally, these guys led him to the pits last year. And for whatever reason, he just brought them back to his team again this year. And right, obviously, that was a very unfortunate situation that happened. I think he's really, really good, actually. And so I don't blame him for that. But I mean, some of these other guys, they sound good on paper, but they've just not been performing. And like, and Wally's been seeing this, right? Like, his team hasn't been doing well for the first few weeks. And then just now, just this morning, he made his first transaction of the season, which just kind of blew my mind. Like, right. I mean, if you're 0-3, it seems like you're in a position where you just have to be making changes, and you have to be sort of cycling through some of the ad drop guys and just like picking up lottery tickets, doing that kind of thing. But I don't know. It's been a little bit disappointing for me, I think, just see that he's just letting this happen to his team and just like finally made one move, but like otherwise just kind of just sort of a passenger, you know?
Yeah, I also looked at his team and I was thinking about, you know, how is this guy not making any moves? There's a couple of droppable pieces, I think. I think you can drop Tyler Boyd. You can drop Irv Smith. Other than that, it's tough to drop any of these guys at this point. Tyler Boyd is always interesting because he is kind of that lottery ticket. If Jamar Chase or T. Higgins were ever to miss time, you could expect that he is going to feast to a certain extent. But I think Wally's team is stronger than we're giving it credit for. You know, Matt Stafford has had a terrible start to the season. DK Metcalf had a rough start, but he's looking on the up and up. DJ Moore finally got some targets. Kittle was injured at the beginning of the season. Keenan Allen's been injured. Judy's been injured. Renfro's been injured. So I can see Wallace clawing his way out of this unfortunate situation. Jumping across, though, to the other side, to Ace, things are looking... How is Ace 0-4? He doesn't have a terrible team.
Yeah, man. I mean, in the preseason preview, I picked Ace as a potential draft winner, and I will repent for that. And you had picked Wally. So I think those picks didn't turn out well for us. But I think your point about Ace's team, though, is... Yeah, I mean, when he went to the pits a couple years ago, I thought he ended up being very unlucky that year. And I mean, I have to say, it looks kind of the same this time around, where it's just like, I think he's got good players, right? Jamar Chase, Deontay Johnson, Devontae Smith, Jonathan Taylor, Joe Mixon. Yeah. I mean, these guys, a lot of these guys are just like studs that for whatever reason just have like not been performing. And obviously, Jonathan Taylor got a little injured. But like, yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to what you were saying, where early on, where he didn't invest very well at quarterback. And I think he's also right because he's invested in several low tier quarterbacks, the sit start is really tough. And so like that bit him in the ass this week. But it's not like there's an easy way out of that just because all these guys that he has, like Geno Smith, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, they're just like,
it's all the same.
Yeah, exactly. And so anytime you're doing a sit start between them, you're just like rolling the dice, basically.
Yeah. You know, I look at both of these teams and I look at my team and I feel like I'm on that level with them right now, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is that you've got a guy like Lamar who is just, he can blow up in a way that like literally nobody else in fantasy can, right?
Yeah.
Like, and he's done it right this year so far. And who knows if that will continue, but just the fact that he has that potential, I think just totally sets you apart from the.
That is true. That I do have kind of the Trump card in my back pocket with that guy. So I guess the only other thing to get into from the previous week is I think points total wise, we're starting to see a trend emerge. I forget who commented in the group chat, but it seems like our points total this year is lower than years past. I think running back has become an issue for everybody this year. And it's starting to look like if you can put up 140 points, you've got a shot to win. If you can put up 150 points, you're probably going to win. And if you put up 160 points, it's, you know, you'd be very unfortunate not to win.
Yeah. And I think if I'm not mistaken, I think just scoring in general is down in the NFL. I mean, and so obviously that, right, fewer touchdowns, fewer points just means fewer fantasy points as well. So I guess it's not surprising, but like, I don't know if that's a trend that's really going to hold up all year, but yeah, I mean, I think you're right that that's how it's looking for now.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's get into kind of injury news and then some waiver stuff. So we had some big injuries go down this week. Javonta, we already touched on briefly. That's a big blow to Wally. He was Wally's, you know, kind of hot ticket at running back. He's gone. That hurts big time. Tua is out indefinitely, although I was talking to Frank about this. He was trying to bait me into a trade, and my gut feeling is he'll be back for week 8, potentially week 7. But you never know. We got JT got a little dinged up, Jonathan Taylor for Ace, but I'm assuming he doesn't play this coming week because of the short week, but I think he'll be back the following week. Anything else that I'm missing here?
Nothing that comes to mind. Yeah, I mean, I think, I already mentioned, but Javonte, I think that one,
Like, I think he's just a really, really good player. Just like passes the eye test. Like from last year, I was like, damn, this dude is like, he's got it. But like for some reason, just like that coaching staff just doesn't seem to want to give him the work, which like I just is just completely baffling to me. But so he wasn't performing, but yeah, I think that hurts real pretty bad for Wally just because he represented just like a ton of potential upside if he were to just get more carries, basically. So like if Wally were, you know, seeking to make actual transactions and potentially a trade, like that's the kind of guy who could have been like a super useful trade chip that, yeah, is just not going to be around now. That's, yeah, that's got to be painful.
Yeah. And then for Tua, here's my gut feeling on this thing. I think, so they already said he's sitting this week. I assume he's going to be passing these concussion protocol tests because I just don't think they're very tough. And I'm guessing he'll be practicing and there'll be news that he's been cleared to play. And then Miami's going to, you know, say, oh, well, we want to be really cautious because, you know, we take Tua's health seriously. So we're going to sit him again. So they'll sit him in week 6. And then I think he'll come back week 7, if not week 8. But I could be wrong. I'm basing this on zero scientific evidence. And it's just, I feel like they want to get him in there as soon as possible. He wants to get in there as soon as possible, but the team has to, you know, pretend like they are being cautious with him. And they'll probably try to get him, you know, cleared for week 7 or week 6, but then, you know, pretend that they're holding him out for his best interest.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, super hard to predict, but at this point, it's such like a PR disaster already that you know that like the optics of it are going to be like the number one priority for the team in the NFL at this point, right? Just because like it's just, it would like, it just looked so bad with that first like fake back injury. I mean, it was just like, who are you guys fucking kidding, man? Like, come on. Like, we all saw it happen.
I was talking to Holden about this, or we were texting back and forth. There's kind of this this catch 22 situation that they found themselves in, where they're running with this narrative that the Bills game injury was a back injury and an ankle injury, not a concussion. So if they're going to run with that, they have to say, well, it was just one concussion, so you know there's no reason to hold him out. But then on the other hand, like you said, the optics are so bad, they kind of have to hold them out a little longer than they'd want to. So I think there's just kind of that internal struggle there where they can't hold them out too long because then it gives credence to the idea that they knew that the first one was a concussion, but they can't put him back in because if he gets another concussion, you know, it would just be atrocious PR. So
yeah, on 100%, like, right. When they said that the first one wasn't a concussion, basically they were pot committed and they just like dropped in this massive bluff and then they didn't realize how they were going to get trapped by it, you know? And yeah, like, it's just come back to bite them in the ass for sure, for exactly what you're saying. Like, they can't, yeah, they just can't hold them out extra long because that suggests that they were lying to us first time around. And otherwise, if they do just put them back in, then, I mean, it's like, you're seriously like potentially like risking like his just serious long-term consequences, I think, from what I've read. So yeah, no, totally agree.
Okay. Yeah. And then I guess on the sunny side of things, Brian Robinson is coming back to practice. That was announced today. Got shot in the leg twice, the rookie sensation of the preseason, who won the role in Washington, and it looks like he's coming back, and it'll be interesting to see if getting shot in the leg is no longer a career ending injury.
Yeah, man, Brian Robinson, this is like a bizarre one to me because there's just like so much expectation attached to this guy who's not played like a single actual NFL snap, who was just recently shot and is like playing behind a running back who is like, you know, not great, but he's also like not terrible. Like Antonio Gibson, like, you know, he gets the job done more or less. Yet there's just like so much like hype and expectation just built into Robinson. Yeah,
everyone wants him to do well, right? Because what a great story that would be. But yeah, it seems like it's a lot of hype for someone that is there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the hype was already like building pretty hard before he even got shot and before there was this like additional storyline added to it. So, I mean, yeah, it's like if he just comes out, you know, he's going to have like four carries for like 9 yards. It's just going to be right. It's going to be a big disappointment.
Yeah. Did Plaxico come back from shooting himself in the leg ever? Did he play after that?
You know, I don't recall like how long he was out for, but I mean, I know he played again. I just don't know if it was like the next season or what, though.
No, he went to jail, I thought, right after that for like a firearms charge.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely right, but I think I'm pretty sure he played in the league again after that. Or
I think so too.
Yeah, I this is, man, we're like going way back in history at this point, though.
Okay. Anything else to touch on from waivers news?
No, I mean, I think, right, there were just two kind of big-ish pickups this week. Mike Boone, Tyler Allgeier, just backup running backs. Right, I mean, I think neither of them are sort of expected to be the kind of like elite replacements that can pop up in the middle of the season. But yeah, I mean, decent spends going into those guys, 17 and 16.
Yeah, I think the way I look at it, you know, they overspent clearly just because of the bids that came in lower. But whenever a player, a young player, well, I guess Allgeier's young, Mike Boone's not that young, but whenever a player that doesn't have a reputation gets a shot to get a lot of touches, there's just always the possibility that they pop off and look amazing and, you know, become a stalwart for that team. But I wouldn't expect it from Mike Boone necessarily. Tyler Allgeier, maybe, because he's young and he, you know, he hasn't taken a lot of miles, but Boone's been in the league. You think if it was going to happen for him, it would have happened by now.
Yeah, I mean, definitely that sort of speculative, like the sort of amount of spend that you want to put in, like I'd be much more willing to do it, like you're saying, for the young guy who just like is this, right, it's kind of just a mystery, and like maybe you're getting the next big guy. But yeah, somebody like Mike Boone, who I know has been in the league for a while, but like I've literally not heard of anything that he's ever done. Yeah, I mean, it does feel, it feels a little steep for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like you're saying though, like, I mean, you and Cappy were talking about this last week, but when you look at the next highest bid, like, it's always rough to know that you could have just bid so much lower. But yeah, I mean, you also just have to shoot your shot sometimes and just make sure you get the guy.
Yeah. Although I will say for Boone, well, I guess not for Boone, but for the Javonta situation, I think the big winner in that was you with Russell Wilson, right? Like, and I guess me to a certain extent as well with Cortland Sutton. I mean, I just have to assume that they are not going to run the ball nearly as much and that Russ is going to be throwing the ball more often, which means more points for you and me. So well, that works for me.
I mean, yeah, hopefully that's how it turns out. But I mean, I think actually it's kind of funny, right? Like Javonte goes down on Wally's team, and I think the big beneficiary is actually going to be Ace because he's got Melvin Gordon already just sitting on the bench. And right, I would expect him to get more of the work than Mike Boone. I'm sure, right? I assume Boone will get mixed in and whatever, but I mean, I think the main guy who's going to take a lot of that work is going to be Gordon.
Very true. And then there was one other guy we left off who may just be a flyer this week that Frank picked up, Nyheim Hines for 9 Bitcoin. My gut feeling is they don't roll JT out there for one game. When he's, you know, a little dinged up, and that would mean Nyheim Hines is going to get some extra looks, and he's a good player. He usually doesn't get that many touches, but I think he could have a big week if Jonathan Taylor's out. And for 9 Bitcoin, getting a you know, top 20 running back probably on the week is not a bad move ever.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess just if I were to nitpick, I would just say that like he I don't think he'll get like a full workload. He'll have like an expanded role, but I assume they'll bring up, I don't know who the third string there is, or if they even bring somebody up from the practice squad or whatever, but I assume that they will have somebody who sort of takes on the sort of Jonathan Taylor kind of like Diet Coke role, where he's, you know, getting some of the early down carries. But yeah, no, I mean, every time I see Hines play, every time he has the ball, I always think he looks great. So yeah, I mean, I think that's a decent pickup.
You drafted Isaiah Pacheco, right?
Yes, I definitely did. And then I dropped him very quickly.
I picked him up for 6 Bitcoin. Overspend probably, but I just view him as a lottery ticket. I don't think Clyde is really that good. I think he just kind of, you know, is on a good team. And Isaiah looked pretty good this past week. So I'm hoping that he slowly starts to eat into that role. And by the time week 9 rolls around, I have the starting running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. But we'll see if that's going to happen or not.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Clyde's way just – yeah, he's way overachieving, unsustainably so. And I think the only problem with Pacheco, the reason why I dropped him, was just because I think he's got 2 guys ahead of him. It's not just him behind Clyde. I think he's also got Jerick McKinnon ahead of him as well. So it just seemed like a tall order to have him just pass both of those guys. But, I mean, yeah, it's worth roll of the dice for sure.
Yeah.
Actually, one transaction that happened last week that just hasn't – there was zero discussion about this in the group chat that I thought it was an interesting one, was Ace's trade with Holden. Ace – that's a big trade. What's that?
Big trade.
Yeah, he Holden picked up Mike Williams. Ace got – who was it? Carson Wentz and James Robinson. And, I mean, obviously that looked terrible for Ace this week, right? I think Robinson shit the bed. Wentz was in single digits, but I mean, notwithstanding this first week of results with that, I mean, what did you think of that trade overall?
Well, Wentz got off to such a hot start this season. You hoped he could keep it going, but I think if you're looking at his schedule, he had some pretty easy matchups in those 2 big blow up games between Jacksonville and Detroit. The season gets a little bit tougher as you go, and he's got a lot of tough matchups. So, but he's still a quarterback, so he's still got some value. Mike Williams obviously loses value whenever Keenan Allen comes back, but we haven't heard much about that injury. And I'm not a big believer in James Robinson, which is why I haven't dropped ETN yet, but it's looking like I'm very wrong on that. I would say Holden won that match, that trade, just slightly, but I think it was pretty even. I still think there's a shot that Carson Wentz is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I think overall, I think Ace had the right idea, which is like, when you're lacking players, you're trying to turn one starter into 2 starters is kind of the way to go. And then on the flip side, you know, if your team is doing well, trying to turn 2 players into 1 better player is kind of the way to go. And so, I mean, I think Ace had the right idea. It just, right, obviously after 1 week, it's looking like he might have picked the wrong guys to go for. But yeah, I mean, I think it's crazy to me that James Robinson has been so good coming off an Achilles, while like Cam Akers has just been like useless. So, I mean, and like the Jags offense is like apparently really good. So yeah, I mean, I think that has, you know, Robinson has potential. Yeah. I mean, I think Carson Wentz kind of turned into a pumpkin after those first 2 weeks, which I was considering trying to get a trade in for him, but yeah, I ended up abandoning ship, and I'm feeling pretty good about that at this point, because I think he's kind of proving that he is, you know, he is who we thought he is. Who we thought he is.
Speaking of he is who we thought he is, are you thinking about trying to ship Daniel Jones off so he can continue his Village Bicycle role and sell him high after a week where he had two rushing touchdowns?
Look, when you've got the best quarterback in the league on your roster, you're looking for a big
as a quarterback. He's the number six quarterback.
I dispute that completely. I believe that's just totally erroneous. He is absolutely the best quarterback in the league, and so if I'm going to trade him, I'm looking for commensurate value. You know,
Lamar for Daniel Jones, straight up.
Yeah, you throw in four Bitcoin, we got a deal.
Okay. I'll send over the offer.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, and then we talked about a little bit of a segment to do here. So let's talk about some underperformers and overperformers. Why don't you give me your first underperformer for the year?
Todd, I mean, I think you're not going to be surprised to hear this, but and I'm sure you've felt the pain so far. But yeah, I mean, Kyle Pitts, man, like pits of despair right there. Like, Jesus Christ, how he has been like really, really bad this season. And like, I thought he was a little overvalued before heading into the draft. But I mean, what he's been like is he's been far worse than I expected. He's currently ranked in between Evan Ingram and Irv Smith. And he's behind a dude named Colby Parkinson, who I've never heard of. These are all like the tight ends that are around him in the rankings. Like, man, like what? I mean, even beyond just fantasy, like they just dropped like a top five draft pick on this guy. And they just like, he's just like a glorified blocker, basically. Like what? I do not understand what they're doing.
Yeah, it certainly hurts. But I also still have hope, right? Like I think that, for example, this week they play Tampa. Tampa's going to put up a lot of points. They're going to be playing from behind and Mariota's going to have to throw. That running game has been really good with Patterson. I think him going out makes Mariota have to throw a little more as well. So I think he'll have his big blow up games. It's a shame he hasn't had any yet. But when he does, I think it'll help me get some wins down the road. And at this point, I'm more concerned about staying out of the pits than I am about making playoffs. So as long as he helps me stay away from that, I'll be happy with the pick at this point.
Yeah, I think the problem here is that, I don't know if you know this, but Arthur Smith, the head coach of that team, is the son of the founder of FedEx. So he's basically he's a billionaire who's just like coaching football as a hobby. And so I think what he's doing, I think he's just refusing to give the ball to Pitts just out of spite to against just like us common folk who play fantasy football. Like he just basically he hates you, Todd, personally. And he thinks like he's just trying to inflict this pain upon you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to stick with the same thread. And I spent 20 Bitcoin on Pitts. So it definitely... That Bitcoin could have been used somewhere else, but I think the only saving grace are the other kind of tier two tight ends that were drafted. So tier one, Mark Andrews and Kelsey, I think you're happy, even though Mark Andrews shit the bed last week. But then in tier two, you've got Darren Waller, George Kittle, Dalton Schultz, Kyle Pitts, right? And I have this written down. So Kittle went for 10, Bitcoin, Waller for 11, Pitts for 20, and Schultz for 15. None of these guys have been paying off at all. Kittle is an amazing blocker, and that seems to be his role at this point. Although he did get that end zone target where he almost got that touchdown, but he stepped out of bounds. But none of those guys have paid off, and I think everyone that decided to invest a little Bitcoin to try to have a difference maker at tight end has been pretty disappointed with that spend.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think exactly what you're saying, like outside of the really elite guys, like the rest are all just totally interchangeable. And they end up being just usually, I feel like a waste of Bitcoin. And I mean, think about Kittle. I mean, I think he's a better NFL player than a fantasy asset at this point. And I mean, I think that he'll have his blow up games. And I think it's just totally like a Shanahan game plan thing where there are certain matchups where he's just going to have Jimmy hyper target Kittle. And those are the games where he blows up. And that's how he just sort of retains his year to year kind of like cost in the draft, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Who's your other underperformer?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually not just one player, but it's just pretty much all the Rams players in general. And it just makes me really happy, first of all, that, you know, just to see them struggle, just to see the Niners defense just kick their ass is pretty great. But I mean, yeah, like Cooper Kupp, he's doing his thing. Tyler Higbee is, you know, overachieving for what was, you know, compared to expectations, but he seems like, you know, just kind of, you know, okay, basically. But then otherwise, man, like Allen Robinson, I thought he was going to have a bounce back year. I was on that, you know, I believed in that, and I was a little sad to not get him in the draft, but wow. Yeah. Dodge the bullet there. Like Franco just dropped him, and I don't see any reason why somebody's going to pick him up anytime soon. And then likewise, Cam Akers, just like, yeah, I mean, he had zero to start the season and just like hasn't really picked it up since then. And then Daryl Henderson is one that, like, every time I see him play, I feel like he looks really good. But then just like, I don't know, Sean McVay just like kind of hates him, I think. Like, even when he's like performing well last year, it just feels like McVay is just trying to find other guys to get in there instead of him for some reason.
Yeah. I sent Frank a meme that I saw yesterday on Twitter with the McGregor Jeremy Stevens moment, and it was Matt Stafford when he sees Allen Robinson in the huddle.
You know, and actually that's another one, is Matt Stafford. Right. Like, he had a, you know, like, I mean, it's just that this team, like, they were getting so much love after they won the Super Bowl, and it's just, yeah, all of them have just been disappointing. And yeah, again, just love to see it.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Does not look his way at all. Just no clue that he even has Allen Robinson on his team. Just
And it's just like, you would think that, right, based on what we saw last year and or just, you know, multiple previous years, it's just like the number two receiver in these McVay offenses have always been like valuable. Yeah. And so, like, you just assume that Robinson, they paid him a lot of money too. You just assume they would plug him into that kind of role, and then he'd produce. But it's just like, no,
he hasn't been going to breakfast with Stafford and Kupp, clearly.
What was that?
He's not going to breakfast with Stafford and Kupp.
No, and I mean, it seems like it's not just that he's like, you know, it's not that he missed the invitation. It's just that they're, you know, deliberately trying to keep him out.
Yeah. Okay, my other underperformer is an obvious one, but DJ Moore. I mean, poor guy. Did you see the clip about Matt Rhule talking about how the receivers need to get more open for Baker? And he was just kind of, you know, trying to hold his tongue about, you know, it being Baker, not him, that's the issue. Did you happen to see that clip?
I did not, but yeah, I mean, that sounds like a coach who A, sucks at his job, but also is just trying to like maintain whatever shred of confidence that Baker has left in himself.
Yeah, so I mean, he got a bunch of targets this coming week, but Baker looks just lost out there. And the offensive line isn't helping, obviously, but I don't think Baker's that good. I think Matt Rhule is terrible. Part of the reason why I traded him to you was my bye weeks for quarterback were 10 and 11 between Tua and Lamar, and I just had no confidence that he was still going to be the quarterback then. And Darnold's not ready to come back, but I wouldn't be shocked to see them give rookie Matt Corral a go if some of these games start to get really ugly. And I think this weekend's going to get ugly.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like, I was telling you yesterday, I mean, I think you kind of fleeced yourself a little bit there. I mean, not a mega fleece, but just in the sense that you sold Baker for very little just to pick up Jimmy. And I mean, Jimmy's an upgrade for sure over Baker, but we've all seen him play. We've all been frustrated by him, both just as an NFL quarterback and also, I'm sure, fantasy owners as well. So it's just like, it wasn't much of an upgrade for quite a bit of Bitcoin that you put into that. But
so it was quite a bit of Bitcoin, but my thought process there was that Tua and Lamar were going to be my starters, and that I would have to play someone in weeks 10 and 11. And I just couldn't say with confidence that Baker would be the starter at that point. I was like, well, with Lance out, I know Jimmy's going to be the starter. They're probably going to be winning a lot of games. So at least I have a piece that I can just confidently say, you know, in 8 to 9 weeks, I know is going to be the starter. And there just aren't other guys like that.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, for sure. I mean, I hear that. Like, I build on Baker as soon as I possibly could as well. So
and now Jimmy's my starter, and I don't feel great about it. But every, you know, most teams have one of those guys right now, and I'm just hoping Tua comes back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, how about overperformers? Who do you got there?
All right. So, all right, I'll go quick just to keep this moving. But, number one, I mean, Geno Smith, man, like,
yeah,
like he, right. The Seahawks had a, what I thought was just a pathetic quarterback competition going on between him and Drew Lock going into the season. They named Geno the starter. I assume this was just like a tanking move to just get a good draft pick, but I mean, he's just been performing, right? I mean, he beat Russ head to head. He's been performing better than Russ, like, as you know, both in terms of fantasy and just real football. Like, yeah, absolutely did not see that coming. And somehow he was, you know, the bright spot for on Ace's team this past week and like put up like what, like a third of his points, something like that. So yeah, I mean, yeah. Just big game and yeah, just a surprising season from him so far. And then the second overachiever I had put down.
You think it lasts?
So what was that?
You think it lasts?
I think it might, like, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I think the easy answer is no, is that it won't. But like, I mean, I think from what I've seen, he's looked like pretty good and like might actually just get it done. Cause I think he did pretty well last season as well when he played. So like, I thought that was a fluke, but like now that he's doing it over the course of two different seasons, I mean, maybe, yeah, I think he might be able to keep it up.
Okay. And then who's your other overachiever?
Yeah, this one's a little sad because it's another player on your team, but it's Tua, just because, and I only say this because like I really truly did not believe in him this year or ever really for that matter. But I mean, yeah, he just kind of shows like how much like improved coaching and like personnel can just change the fortunes of a quarterback. So yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of his points came in this like one blow up game when there was like, you know, like 90 points scored in the game total. So like, yeah, that's going to be a little inflated. But yeah, just in general, I mean, I think he was looking to be a much better sort of fantasy asset than I was expecting. But yeah, that obviously changed now with the whole concussion thing. But yeah, I just wanted to shout this guy out.
Yeah, he's been good. I think one thing that both of those guys have in common is a pretty stacked receiver core. So I mean, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, I think they're both just incredible players, and the same can be said about Waddle and Tyreek Hill. So if you have guys who can be dominant wide receivers, you just got to get the ball in their hands a couple of times and they can do the rest for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm gonna be quick with mine too, because I think we've probably done quite a bit of time already. But my two overachievers, one is on your team, and that would be T. Higgins, because I was kind of wary about T. Higgins because I said, man, Ja'Marr Chase blew up as a rookie. He's just going to continue that trend and take more of the target share. Well, T. Higgins for 13 Bitcoin, which is, I believe, the same price that Frank paid for Allen Robinson, is a great deal compared to 35 for Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't really thought about those draft day values much, but yeah, I mean, that's pretty delicious, especially in terms of 13 for Allen Robinson. Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely take it. And right, I mean, yeah, I think Higgins is really good. And obviously, like, Chase, I think, attracts a lot of defensive attention, which just, you know, is contributing to Higgins. But like, man, I think he's supposed to be a free agent this coming season, I think. So like, after the season. So yeah, I mean, I think that's going to, like, you know, if the Niners weren't fairly stacked at wide at receiver, like that's the kind of guy I would love to see on the Niners.
Yep. And then, and DJ Moore went for more than T. Higgins. DJ Moore went for 16 Bitcoin. So
brutal.
Great value pick there. And I think he's been outperforming Chase. So it
for sure.
If he can keep it up, but great pick there. And then the other one I'm going to go with is Cooper Kupp. As I don't know if you want to call it an overperformer, because I think he's performing to where you'd hoped he'd perform. But considering how a lot of the other top draft picks with Bitcoin spent either got injured or haven't been performing or a combination of the both, Cooper Kupp has just been consistency. I mean, he's just getting 100-point games or touchdown games, and there's just no one else like him where it's just no matter what happens. I mean, the game against the Niners was a complete shit show, right? Like 6 or 7 sacks, all the turnovers, everyone had a bad game, yet Cooper Kupp continues to just deliver points.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Definitely. I assume that he would be elite, but not to like the level he was at last season. Right. Just kind of assume that there's going to be some regression there, but I mean, it just hasn't happened. The dude, I mean, he's just fucking good, man. And it's rare to see that from a wide receiver, you know, so good for him.
I think he had 19 targets. I mean, he's Allen Robinson and Cooper Kupp put together at this point. Like it just.
Yeah,
dude, he's worth two players.
For sure. And I mean, it's just like Stafford doesn't throw anybody else the ball. It's just, yeah, he's just locked on his guy.
This is crazy. 19 targets for Cooper Kupp, 14 receptions, 14 targets for Tyler Higbee, 10 receptions. I mean, he was just looking that way. I can't believe Allen Robinson had 6 targets in that game and still put up such terrible numbers. But yeah, Cooper Kupp, just a behemoth. He can't be stopped. He just gets open.
Yeah, absolute beast for sure.
Okay, anything you want to touch on for this coming up week?
Yeah, not specifically. I mean, I think all I got left for you is my bust of the week.
Ooh, okay. Who's your bust of the week? I hadn't prepared one, but I'll get one pretty quickly here. Go for it.
Well, okay. So this one's going to be a little bit unfair just because I'm not going after sort of like a high level player, but just, I just wanted to mention this because I think it's just a super unfortunate series of events that's about to unfold for Kenny Pickett. Because right, he's taken over basically as a starter for the Steelers. But his next two games, his first two NFL starts, are going to be against the Bills and then the Bucks. So he's just getting thrown to the wolves. Just like Mike Tomlin is just going to let. I mean, these defenses are just going to feast, I think. And so, you know, I picked up George Pickens this week and, you know, hopefully, you know, I have a sort of rest of the season in mind there as a potential, you know, potentially that he'll emerge. But like, yeah, with just a brand new quarterback going against these defenses. Yeah, I think that's about to get messy for them.
Okay, well, I'm going to stick on a similar line. I think Najee Harris, my boy, is going to be the bust of the week. I'm pretty tempted to start Etienne over him and make a bold call, and I still might, but the way I see this going is Buffalo scores on the first drive, Pitt goes 3 and out, Buffalo scores on the second drive, and then from there on out they just are forced to throw the ball. Najee is just not involved at all, and maybe gets 12 touches, 3 targets, and probably not a touchdown, and ends up with, you know, 60 points or something like that. Or it's not 60 points, 6 points on 60 yards.
Yeah.
Very difficult to roll them out in that type of situation.
Yeah.
And I mean, then you got Etienne going up against Houston, which should be a competitive game. And I don't think he's the guy there, but I think he's, it's about time for him to have a touchdown.
Would that be his first of his career?
That would be his first career touchdown, yes.
All right, yeah. I mean, I don't disagree. Like, I think you already know I'm not high on Najee. And yeah, I mean, I was just listing those defenses, and I think also Pickett, I think, seems like he's a little more prone to scrambling if things break down rather than just checking it down to the running back. So yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying.
What's your view? And let's just have this be the last thing, unless you've got something else to add, but what is your view on making those tough sit start calls where you bench a guy in a bad matchup that just seems situationally is not gonna get it done? Would you make that call, or do you just roll out the big name guy?
I mean, my view is that whatever decision I make will definitely be the wrong one. So it's just like, why even bother? No, but actually, I mean, I would generally, I would just stick with my stud players, the guys who I drafted to be my kind of key starters. But I mean, just in this case, like, I mean, you've already heard me say it, where I just didn't think Najee was a good pick this year in general. So if I was not high on my player like that, then I would be much more willing to just bench him.
Yeah. Ooh, gonna be a tough one, but I think I just benched him, and I'm looking at my team and it feels better, because that game script is just going to be so against him. And realistically, they're going to be down early. They're going to be throwing the ball. And like you said, you got a young quarterback that's going to scramble. He's probably not looking at his check down guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, anything else to add, or is that it?
No, man, that's all I got for you this week.
Okay, well, we got a big matchup on Thursday. Lots of players involved there. Probably you're going to be seeing Judy started. You're going to be seeing Melvin Gordon, I would assume, started. Although maybe not, because – oh, no, Ace will probably have to start him if JT's out. Pittman, your boy who's been underperforming, Cortland Sutton, Russell Wilson, Jerry Jeudy. Yeah, lots of guys starting on Thursday, so that should be a fun one.
Yeah, for sure. I won't be that game starts at like 3 a.m. for me, so I won't be watching, but it's always fun to wake up and open the app and just see what kind of points just came through overnight.
Oh, speaking of which, now I have to, because you mentioned that game starts at 3 a.m. for you, which – do you think 3 a.m. start games are tougher than 6:30 a.m. start games?
You know, I have no idea what comparison you're trying to make right now, Todd, but I would say that a 3 a.m. start is a little less favorable than 6:30.
Okay. Yeah, because Alvin Kamara did not play this past week, and he was in Alex Holden's starting lineup, and it wouldn't have made a difference anyways, but Alex still had a good week without him. But I heard through the grapevine that maybe there was some behind closed door commissioner request to let him adjust the lineup. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I can't really confirm or deny, but I would just say that my general position is that we're all responsible for dealing with our teams and knowing the injury situations and knowing the kickoff times. And so I might actually have kind of a decision coming up with Russ. Like, I assume he'll play, but he is questionable. And so if I'm going to make a decision on whether to start him, it's going to have to be early in the night for me, well before.
Drink a lot of water before you go to bed and hope that it gets you up.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't done the water alarm in quite a while now. And now that you're reminding me, and I might have to go for it.
Yeah, well, the funniest part for me for that was that Holden knew that asking the league was just a non-starter, and that his only chance was, you know, a executive decision from the commissioner, and that he was not going to get any sympathy from the league. So he shot his shot with the commish, but then when it got shut down, there was no appeal to the rest of the league, which, very smart move on his part.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a smart PR play for sure.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the Pits and Perils podcast. I think this is a very long one. Twiz, are you able to upload it?
Yeah, I'll get this up.
Okay. Well, enjoy week 5, man. Later.
Sounds good, man. See you later.